Social Media 101, how to choose and most effectively use social media for your business or personal life. The Pew Research Center reports that 8 in 10 people who are online have a Facebook page. Facebook has more than 1.5 billion users worldwide. LinkedIn, the business networking site, reports 450 million members. Twitter, more than 320 million. A lot of people use these platforms, but are they using them effectively? I'm Jennifer Rooks, and today we will learn about different social media platforms, best practices, and strategies for using them in both your work and personal life. Here's a start. Keep it short, don't overshare, and never, ever put anything online you wouldn't be comfortable seeing on the front page of a newspaper. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio Studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. These days, the world seems to be divided on two lines, those who embrace social media and those who don't. Love it or hate it, social media is not going anywhere. Today, we're going to discuss ways to enhance your social media experience, whether you use it to keep up with the family or to promote your small business. In the studio with me, Nancy Marshall. She is the CEO of Nancy Marshall Communications, an award-winning PR, marketing, and communications firm. John Ippolito is president. Excuse me, I gave you a promotion, John. Professor at the University of Maine and program coordinator of your Department of New Media. He is an artist, former Guggenheim curator, and co-founder of the Stillwater New Media Program at UMaine. And on the line with us, Claire Kramer. She is the CEO of GeekNation.com, a collaboration of several Hollywood actors, writers, producers, and directors to provide quality content. She specializes in social media management and branding. Do you consider yourself a social media connoisseur, or do you shun all things Facebook? We'd like to hear from you. Either way, or are you just looking for tips for your small business or to expand your business? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. John, I'm going to start with looking at the scope of social media. I love numbers. Doing some research for this program, I saw that last year Facebook surpassed 1.5 billion pages. Is that number right?
As far as we know, that number is right. Or as far as Facebook knows, I haven't looked at the latest statistics. But if Facebook were a country, it would rival, you know, some of the largest countries that we know in the world today. In the U.S. alone, Facebook, as of 2014, so that's a little dated, had 70% of people on it. But not just Facebook. We're looking at YouTube, 60%, blogs, 50%, LinkedIn, Pinterest, Snapchat, all around 30%. Twitter, 25. So what's happened is that social media has become tied into the fabric of lives of the vast majority of people in the United States and increasingly in the world.
And so a decade ago, social media was tied into the lives of a certain demographic. But today that's no longer the case.
I think it's more that the demographic splintering across different platforms. So Facebook was the, you know, the social media du jour of the early, late 2000s, right? And everyone who was young was on Facebook. Now, if you talk to your average teenager, at least when I do, they go to Facebook to like post things that their mom will see, and they're more likely to use Instagram or Snapchat. Older, more educated people might be interested in Twitter and LinkedIn. Rural communities trend toward Pinterest. Urban tend toward Instagram and Snapchat. So you see a kind of a creation of niches that people are moving into, and that can create anxiety because no one knows. We often don't know which niche we should be paying attention to.
Nancy Marshall, your firm has all kinds of clients, from old established Maine businesses to newer, hipper businesses. Who is social media important for in the business world?
Well, Jennifer, first of all, I want to say that I think that social media was created just for me because I'm such a social person and it allows me to socialize 24/7. like in the middle of the night. But I think that social media is really important for everyone, regardless of how old you are, because it's all about socializing. And human beings, after all, are social beings. So whether you're an individual or whether you're a small or large business person, it behooves you to socialize and to connect.
Do you ever have a hard time convincing your clients that they need to put more resources into social media?
Oh, yes. People are afraid of it. People feel that they don't have time for it. People are afraid, what if somebody complains publicly? What do they do? There's all kinds of fears around social media.
And what do you tell them?
Well, for one thing, I tell them that it's better that people complain so that you can respond to that complaint and you know about it. Because if there's a customer who's unhappy, they're going to complain to somebody. So you might as well know about it so you can address it. And so I suggest that you do what we call social listening, which is pay attention to what people are saying about your brand online, and then try to take the conversation offline. So you address the complaint by saying, thank you, Mr. Customer, for your complaint. And could we please talk offline? Could you call me or could I email you? And there's a new book called Hug Your Haters by Chris Brogan that's all about how much you can actually turn customers around after they've complained and actually turn them into brand ambassadors.
Wow.
For your brand. But it's really all about kind of building a tribe of people who love your brand, a cult of people who just want to go out and be raving fans for your brand.
Claire Kramer, you've been on the program before, but we've been talking about movies before because you're an actor and producer, but you also have a company that does social media management and branding. What are your clients looking for from you? What are they doing wrong that they need to fix?
Well, first of all, Jennifer, thank you so much for having me back. I am excited to be on the show today. And I just want to start off, I think you really hit the nail on the head when you started the program by saying there's so many platforms, there's so much content out there, it can be very confusing for a brand or an individual. And I think this is a good point to make the distinction sort of between social media and social marketing. When we're talking about a brand or company, we're talking about social marketing. When we're talking about a person sharing a piece of content, a video, a picture, a sentiment, that's more social media. It all does fall under the category of social media, but I think really to help your listeners identify what's important to them, we should talk about branding as marketing. And when a brand comes online for the first time, you know, they can create their own presence just like an individual can. So what they want to look for is which platforms are going to best serve their brand. If they're, you know, an entertainment company versus a restaurant versus, you know, an arts and crafts store, they're going to be looking at different outlets that are going to better facilitate their ultimate goals, which is return on investment.
Claire, in doing research for this program, I saw that there's, you know, hundreds of millions of small businesses that, for example, have a Facebook page, but only about 4 million that actually pay for advertising on a Facebook page. Do you find that many companies, whether it's Facebook or another platform, tend to do what's free and then not do anything more? And is that a good idea or a mistake?
Well, it's always, I would never say it's a bad idea to have a Facebook page because it's essential to a brand. It is, in my opinion, Facebook has become the new sort of .com. People don't go and seek out your .com online. They go to your Facebook page. People are scrolling on Facebook all day on their tablets, on their smartphones, and that's really that's where you can get information out quickly and effectively. So a brand should always have an active Facebook page. However, about 2 years ago, Facebook changed their algorithm when they decided to monetize their business pages. Now, keep in mind, before this, Facebook was a completely free platform for everyone. Now what they've done is said, great, we've built an amazing platform. We're glad everyone's here. But if you're a brand and you want your content seen, then you're going to have to put some money behind it. Otherwise, we're going to lock down your algorithm a little bit, and you're only going to be visible to a small percentage, be it 10 or 20% of your audience, which is the people who like your page. So if you're a brand and you're launching on Facebook and you come on and you have 200 people like your page and you're putting up content and you can see down there, if you're an admin on the page, it says seen by 2 people, seen by 3 people. That's because you don't have the reach. And Facebook is saying, you know what, if you want to use us as a marketing tool, which they arguably have the best marketing and back-end advertising system I have seen in a long time, then you need to put some money behind it in order to take advantage of our programs.
I want to talk a little bit about best practices. John, I'll start with you. I know there are probably dozens of best practices, but what are some of the big kind of no-nos and what are some general guidelines, whether it's a personal social media account or a small business social media account?
Well, Claire and Nancy are well positioned to talk more about the small business. I'll focus a little bit on individuals. I think one of the things that it really pays to do is to prioritize. You have so much to choose from and so much to see and so much to say, given that you can tweet about every little piece of food you had for breakfast as well as important business and personal decisions you make in your life. So being able to prioritize and be curated, if you will, about your posts is helpful. So share content often if you want followers, but share about your breakfast rarely. Make it something people will be interested in. Aim for interaction, not the number of followers. It's better to have more people interacting with your content than just gathering tons of people who really don't repost or retweet or comment on what you do. Beware of bots. There are Twitter, for example, you know, estimates range up to possibly 30%, 25% of Twitter is bots.
I'm going to stop you right there. I happen to have a friend who wrote a book on bots, so I know what a bot is. But I have a feeling a lot of people don't. What is a bot? Would you say beware of bots?
Sounds scary, doesn't it? It's little programs that people write to follow and otherwise interact with people on these social media. Of course, you never see these people face to face when you're in the social medium itself. So you can't tell if the thing responding to you is an algorithm, something written by a computer and responding as though it were a human. There are ways to tell, though. If you say something that, has to do with, let's say, local business in Maine, and suddenly you get this response from this scantily clad person who's inviting you to, send pictures, well, that's probably not a real person. That's probably one of these programs. And there are other cues that you can kind of be aware of. But again, look for some kind of meaningful human interaction as much as you can with a low bandwidth, interface like the internet.
Nancy, for a small business, is there such a thing as oversharing? Is there too much?
Yes, there's definitely too much. And also, we have to remember that it's social media, not selling media. So you don't want to be selling at or selling to people all the time, because really people get on social media because they want to socialize. So we recommend that you do about 4 or 5 posts, social posts, for every one sort of salesy post.
So give us an example. I'm a bakery in Maine.
Right.
What would be a social post and what would be a selling or marketing post?
Okay, so a social post would be, it's Easter time and look at these amazing bunny cupcakes we've created. And Susie, our baker, has created the most amazing bunny cupcakes, and you have a photo, or even better yet, a video of Susie doing her bunny cupcake recipe. So that would be a social post. A salesy post would be 2-for-1 special on bunny cupcakes tomorrow, the Friday before the Easter holiday. So that would be a sales promotion. And people know that you're selling at them. And of course, people do want to feel like they are getting something special because they're following you. So it is good to make an offer, but not every post should be an offer.
And how do you figure out the line between personal and business? For example, do you do a post, congratulations to Susie, our head baker, who just had her baby boy, Davis, and put the picture of the baby on your Facebook page?
Yeah, I believe I believe there's not really a line. And actually, again, I talked before a little bit about this cult or this tribe. I think that if people are going to follow you and be part of your Facebook, that it is, they are sort of entering a little bit of your personal world. And I do think that you should share some of that personal information.
Claire, I want to follow up on this with you, because I suspect that there's a lot of worry, especially as people become higher and higher profile, about the line between sharing personal things and business things. What kind of guidance do you give your clients?
Well, first of all, I think Nancy's absolutely right. And both the sales posts and the entertainment posts can be organic. I think that's the word that really defines good branding and good marketing on Facebook or these other platforms. Organic content. People don't want to see pictures, stock images, photos from, you know, Shutterstock. They want to see real images of cupcakes, of food, real, you know, a congratulatory note on the baker's baby. You're absolutely right. In terms of drawing the line between public and personal personas, when you're dealing with people who have a following, that is it, and they decide to enter into social media in the public arena, you understand that that is an extent of your branding. Just like being giving an interview or being in a magazine, you are putting images out there that reinforce the branding you are creating in the entertainment industry. If you would like to also have private platforms for, let's say, sharing pictures of your kids that you don't want to share publicly, or sharing, you know, having a Facebook page that is locked down to just your very close friends and family, where you can share more intimate moments, then you could have two platforms. And that's really what I recommend for people who are in the public eye, because it is important to have an online presence. It just is nowadays. And that can be done cleanly and just as cohesively as any other PR package.
Claire, let me ask you this. If someone is a client of yours, what can hiring a professional do for them? Maybe somebody is, I'm going to say, chef at a restaurant, has an Instagram, has a Facebook already, but really wants to take it to the next level. What can a professional do that an individual may not have the knowledge or time to be able to do? What's the impact?
Well, when you have a company such as my company, we have individuals who specialize in different platforms. Someone who is doing the Instagramming for our clients is not also doing the Facebook and not also doing the Twitter, because each of those platforms requires a certain specialty knowledge and understanding of how best to gain traction, visibility, and source content. And as Nancy, I believe, used the word ambassadors, through building that audience. So one thing that is advantageous about hiring a company is you get that specialized knowledge on the different platforms. Also, one thing that we offer and any social media company will offer is recommendations on which platforms to use. You know, you mentioned at the top of the show, there's so many platforms. There's Snapchat, there's Tumblr, there's Google+, there's Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, there used to be YouTube, and you know, all these different platforms. It can be very overwhelming and confusing. You need to take a look at a brand. You need to take a look at what those goals are by bringing on a social media team. And ultimately, usually those goals reflect around increasing the revenue of the company. And then you need to identify which areas you'll be able to do that most effectively on. You know, Facebook, and now that Facebook owns Instagram, those two platforms are very, very effective for broadening an audience and increasing sales. Twitter is much like, you know, down on Wall Street, that Twitter feed is running and rolling, and it is a great place to gain visibility and interact. You know, do sales directly correlate to Twitter? Probably not, but it is essential to have a voice on there. And Twitter is very effective with creating online friends where then you can do content shares.
Well, we have to take a quick break. This is such an interesting conversation. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling.
Hamtramck, Michigan, a city of immigrants, these days mostly from Bangladesh and Yemen, so anti-Muslim attitudes hit hard.
There's times where you just got to be the better person and the bigger person, you know, being of Middle Eastern descent. We have to be stronger and learn how to control our emotions.
A visit to predominantly Muslim Hamtramck, Michigan, this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And All Things Considered gets underway this afternoon at 4 o'clock. Do you value Maine Public Radio's news and journalism? Do you appreciate classical music and want to help grow our classical network? Would you like to see a strong, robust, and high-impact Maine Public online digital presence? Do you want to preserve and strengthen public broadcasting in Maine for the future? Charting a Bold Future is Maine Public's comprehensive campaign to secure the future of public broadcasting in Maine. Support for the campaign is your way to cast your vote for public radio and television in Maine. To learn how you can be a part of Charting a Bold Future, please visit mainepublic.org and click on About.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Social Media 101. With me in the studio, John Ippolito. He is professor at UMaine and the program coordinator in their Department of New Media. He's also the co-founder of Stillwater New Media at UMaine, the program at UMaine. Nancy Marshall is CEO of Nancy Marshall Communications, an award-winning PR, marketing, and communications firm. And on the line with us, Claire Kramer, CEO of Geek Nation. .com, a collaboration of several Hollywood actors, writers, producers, and directors to provide quality content. We invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Claire, I have a note here that your Twitter handle is @ClaireKramer and your Instagram is Claire Kramer Official. Nancy, what's your Twitter handle and Instagram? Is it called an Instagram handle or something else?
Yeah, it is. At Maine PR Maven is my Twitter and Instagram handle. And actually, I'm live tweeting right now.
So. Oh, my goodness. And John, do you have these as well?
I can be found at John Ippolito, just my name, which is unique enough to be able to have its own handle without me writing other people for it.
Okay. And I'm not going to say what mine is because I don't have one.
You have a radio show.
Jennifer, are you sure you exist?
I'm pretty certain. I do things like stub my toe and I can feel it. I have a tweet. We're going to start today's program with a tweet, how appropriately, from Christina. Best practices. Do not pre-schedule social posts. You're shouting in the wind. Write in real time. Engage. Be interesting.
I would agree. Pre-scheduled posts can be dangerous because something terrible in the world could happen. You know, you could have a pre-scheduled post about, you know, happy spring and the butterflies are out and the flowers are blooming. And then all of a sudden, an explosion could happen or, war could break out or something terrible. And your brand could be talking about butterflies and unicorns. And so that would show that you just were not in tune. So I would agree.
You know what, Nancy? I do agree that you have to be cognizant of what's going on in the world, of course. And that is one of the jobs of running social media. But Nancy, Jennifer, you were asking about the benefits. Well, when you have a company managing your brands, you can have that eye on that feed and also rely, if you're running a big account, you have to pre-schedule things. There's no way to sit live and post everything and do social media effectively on a live basis for these major big brands. It's just, it's one of the assets that if used correctly and understood correctly can be a real benefit.
We also have a tweet from Christina. Given 20 million plus bots, recent hacks, see McDonald's and Bieber, is it more damaging than helpful for a brand to be on Twitter? I'll ask you that, Claire.
It is not damaging for a brand to be on Twitter. It is essential for a brand to be on Twitter. If you're a one-off store and you don't want to be on Twitter, fine, because you're relying on word of mouth and, your patrons who come in to then send their neighbors and friends to your store. That's fine. That's different. If you are a Macy's, a Hyatt, a McDonald's, you have to be on Twitter. It's just part of branding. If someone goes to your Twitter page and they say, you're a Fortune 500 company and they look and there's 1,000, 2,000 people, what sort of impression does that make in today's world? To me, it says, you know what? We make a good product, but we don't care enough about our branding to be cohesive and to create the sort of imagery online, the through line that we need.
I'm going
to
go.
I think that. Oh, go ahead.
Go ahead. I was just going to go to a call, but finish your thought, Claire.
I think that there's a lot of talk about, these bots. I don't really think it's so concerning. I think that it's yes, occasionally these companies get hacked. We all saw the McDonald's thing. We've seen it. It happens. You know, it's not something that you should dictate your business and your it's a mitigated risk, in other words.
We'll go to Sam, who's
it
calling
shouldn't
from
be so much a deterrent.
Sam in Portland. Go ahead, Sam. Sam in Portland, are you there? Let me try. Sam, are you there?
Hello?
Okay, sorry
Hello?
About that. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. Hello. My name is Sam. Thanks for being on the show. My question relates to particularly millennials, people who just gained access to Facebook as it was a new thing. You know, I was in middle school when Facebook came out, and a lot of us, we said a lot of pretty stupid things on Facebook. And that's out there forever. And I know a lot of other people, probably in the same boat as me, you know, having said a lot of dumb things. What would your advice be for people in that situation? And how can you really, you know, take that back in this era where it's all digitalized and saved forever?
Sure, John, you have a couple college students. You know a couple college students who might be in this boat. What kind of advice? Not only Facebook, but Twitter. People have been posting inane comments for sometimes a decade now.
Well, Sam, I feel for you because you're in that kind of niche generation where the technology was new enough that it seemed private at the time, and now we're discovering it's not as private as we thought. As I mentioned at the beginning, younger people are moving away from Facebook for private posts and more toward essentially self-deleting apps like Snapchat. But for you, having that content already on your Facebook, there's a couple things you can do. None of them are particularly easy, but going through and essentially deleting or deactivating your Facebook account is the sort of the nuclear option. And it's not as hard as you think. Facebook doesn't make it easy for you, of course, and deactivating an account is not the same as deleting it. If you leave the account out there, you can hackers and other people who are sniffing around for information about you can still find it. But there are services like accountkiller.com that will delete the account for you. You don't have to lose all your memories, thankfully. There are applications that will back up your memories for you from Facebook. Digi.me, D-I-G-I.me is one. The Kaspersky Lab is coming out with an app called FF Forget that will help as well. And finally, I would say that although you never can completely expunge yourself from the internet once you've gotten involved, what you can do is try to control the message by increasing the amount of signal as opposed to the noise. And I saw advice recently in the New York Times for college students to create a LinkedIn page. And of course, this is the most boring website on the internet. Why would a high school student, as a high school student, ever create a LinkedIn site? But it's to sort of counteract the tendency of college review boards to Google them and find their embarrassing photos on Facebook. So to actually manage and control your message is another tactic you can use.
Sam, thanks for your question. We're going to go to another call from Portland. This is Gene. Hi, Gene. Go ahead.
Hi. I used to work for the Procter & Gamble company in marketing. This was about 8 years ago. And P&G used very expensive consultants who had proprietary tools to understand the linkages between the social media spend and expected results. Well, most small businesses don't have that kind of capital to spend. So my question is, what tools can a small business use to measure the linkage between the investment in social media and bottom line results?
Nancy?
Well, thank you for your question, Gene. We actually have a process at my agency called the Marshall Plan process, where we create a strategy for our clients in order to first establish what their goals are in connecting with their targeted audiences. And once we identify what the targeted avatars or personas are, we are able to determine which social platforms they're on. Those are the social platforms that we focus on because, again, most small businesses can't spread themselves across all social platforms. So we usually recommend choosing only about two or three. And there's tools like Hootsuite that have dashboards that will help you measure the engagement that you're having with your social posts. And also, Facebook has its own insights and analytics, and you can also use Google Analytics to measure how well you're driving traffic to your website, which I think is one of the ultimate measures of success. So, Gene, in response to your question, there are a whole array of measurement tools available, and the key is to first establish what your goals are and who your targeted audiences are and how well you're connecting with them.
All right, Claire, do you have anything you'd like to add to that?
Sure. Yes, I completely agree with you that these, you know, big brands have so many resources at their fingertips that it's very easy for them to analyze all the data and turn over bigger numbers. What you can do as a small business owner, Facebook is free right now. And Nancy's right. The back end is fantastic. You can go in there. You can look at who your audience is. You can input an email list that you may have for your brand. Like, let's say you're a hardware store and you've been collecting emails for the last 15 years. You can put those emails into Facebook and create an audience based on Facebook will match those emails to their profile, and then you can direct market to a group of people who you know have already purchased from your store. Okay, this is not something that takes a tremendous amount of expertise. Another thing you can do, which I think is very effective, is a free program called Bitly. It is a place where you can take a link to anywhere online and you can shorten it. And through this shortened link and through this program, you can track exactly where your audience is coming from. So let's say you put an offer up for, a grill that's on sale, going with the hardware store theme. You put this link in the offer. So everyone who is coming to look at that sale offer on that grill you have, you can say, okay, these many people came from Facebook, these came from Instagram, these people came from, you know, our general email mailing list. And it's very effective. And then knowing where your audience is, finding your content. Those are two free things. And there's a tremendous amount more. I'll mention some on my Twitter later today.
Great. And it's Bitly, B-I-T-L-Y?
B-I-T period L-Y.
Ah, and I'm also taking some notes here and going to put some links on our Main Calling Facebook page after the program. Gene, thanks for your good question. We have a question from Joyce on Facebook. Joyce writes, I hope you cover the issue of young parents who post so many pictures of babies and toddlers. Will the child really appreciate those potty training photos being out there in 10 years, John?
Yeah, you know, I don't think they will. This again, I think, is a consequence of us all getting used to these social networks and their opt out privacy, right? Like you have to sort of choose privacy deliberately, or it doesn't come automatically. It's also apart from the growing pains just getting used to the technologies, it's also a changing demographic for Facebook, which is turning older and grayer and more parental. And so one of the things I would suggest is that we all think of the young people as the ones who are irresponsible with social media. But in fact, if you turn to teens, you find that they have these unspoken norms for sharing. Mm-hmm. And they're actually really thoughtful. There was a New York Times article recently where they interviewed just some random teenagers and got this whole set of rules, including not over bragging, not sharing too many pictures of parties, and not geotagging friends at a place they already know so it doesn't give away their privacy. And I think sometimes listening to younger people about what they think is correct etiquette for sharing is surprisingly thoughtful.
I always ask my kids. I mean, not if I'm posting a picture of a sunset, but if it's a picture of them or if it's a picture that is kind of silly, you know, they have vetoed some things and said, Mommy and Nancy, you wanted to talk about hashtags. My kids say, don't use hashtags. Do you agree?
Well, I know when we're running events, like if we're at a live conference or event, we try to use hashtags for those in order to aggregate all of the tweets or Instagram posts so people can follow the chain.
I see.
That hashtags are a great way to categorize.
So for business doing marketing around an event, a hashtag is one thing, but
yeah,
coming up with cute hashtags to go with your personal photo, another thing altogether.
Well, I don't know. I guess I haven't asked my two sons who are in their 20s their opinion. They think a lot of what I do is lame, but
I just think that's their job to tell me that I'm lame, and it's my job to embarrass them. And they also tell me you're not supposed to talk about what you read on Facebook. Like, if you see something on Facebook, you're not supposed to talk about it in real time. So that's something I learned, and I'm not sure why that is, but that's another thing that I learned from
that. Well, that's something we're going to have to ponder over the next break. If you'd like to join the conversation, our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. We're talking about social media. This is Maine Calling.
Next time on The World, natural gas, wind, and solar power are growing. America's coal industry is not, even though President Trump says that deregulating coal will create new jobs.
All that's doing is giving people a false hope and keeping people from working towards better alternatives to coal.
A former coal miner tells why he thinks coal is not coming back. He's on The World.
And join us for The World this afternoon at 3.
On the next Fresh Air, the untold story of DARPA, the Pentagon agency founded in 1958 that's focused on creating new defense technologies. Innovations that have come out of DARPA include the internet, communication satellites, drones, the driverless car, and the robot vacuum cleaner. But it's also spent billions on projects like missile shields that didn't work out. Join us.
And you can hear Fresh Air tonight at 7 o'clock. And join us at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling for Speaking in Maine. We'll head to the University of New England for a talk with Marketplace Morning Report host David Brancaccio, this year's Paul D. Merrill Business Ethics Lecturer. That's Speaking in Maine coming up after Maine Calling at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, what you need to know about Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and more, whether for home or small business use. In our studio, Nancy Marshall, CEO of Nancy Marshall Communications. John Ippolito is a professor and Department of New Media Program Coordinator at UMaine. And on the line with us, Claire Kramer, the CEO of geeknation.com. If you'd like to join our conversation, you can do it the old-fashioned way. Give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. If you're fast, you can send us a tweet at Maine Calling or post on our Facebook page or an email, talk@mainecalling.net. We have a tweet from William. If you use Google Analytics, you need to disclose it in a privacy policy. It's just a tweet, so I can't ask him what he means by that.
Okay. Well,
go ahead, Claire.
Go ahead. Oh, no, I was just going to go back. I had a couple tweets on here, too. As far as disclosing where the analytics come from, I think that would be contingent on if you were reporting them to your client to say, yes, these came from Google Analytics. I think that's probably what he means. And that's, you know, that's best practices for any social media agency. Just to call back a little bit when we were talking about hashtags before the break, hashtags are really interesting, and they have a different use on each platform. Primarily, they're not used on Facebook. They don't really serve a purpose there unless you just want to reinforce branding. A lot of times, brands will put a simple hashtag of their just one normal usage hashtag on Facebook. But when you come to Twitter, hashtags are extremely effective, not in just aggregating your own content that you want to keep track of, like Nancy said, but it's a way to find allies and ambassadors. If you're a fan of, let's just say, Star Trek, and you include the Star Trek hashtag after your tweet and you're talking about something Star Trek, you're gonna come up for anyone else who is searching that same hashtag. Same with if you're watching a popular show. Let's say you're a fan of The Walking Dead on Sunday nights and you want to tweet or live tweet about The Walking Dead. Well, you're going to use The Walking Dead hashtag or similar, and you're going to be able to find a whole community of people online that's talking about the same thing you are. And you're going to be able to connect with these people. And that essentially is one of the huge benefits of Twitter. Hashtags on Instagram are almost essential in building your audience. You'll see a lot of times people will use multiple hashtags because that platform is image-based, and those tags allow people to find imagery that they are interested in and may like to view, and also to introduce their own images to other people. So again, with these different platforms, different uses of the same essentially thing.
I sometimes feel like each platform is like a club of its own, and you should sort of lurk in each one before you start participating. Like,
absolutely.
One is kind of like the Rotary Club, and one's like the Elks Club, and you should go to the club and watch how other people are using it before you jump in and sort of break the rules, because they each have their own set of rules.
Probably good advice for so many things in life. Yeah.
I totally agree. I like to say, I kind of like to say, like, Facebook is for who you used to know, Instagram is for beautiful pictures, and Twitter is for who you want to know, you know?
Another thing I've seen is Twitter is where you meet people you don't know but would like, and Facebook is where you convince yourself that you actually don't like the people you do know because of all they share and all you see, and, you know, getting tired of more pictures of the grandchildren.
There are some serial sharers, but I have to say I never get tired of pictures of kids. We're going to go to Rose Marie calling from South Portland. Hi, Rose Marie. Go ahead.
Hi there. I am a college instructor at a community college. So I just wanted to say that I think it's important that we highlight the downside of what's happening with social media. I don't believe it's really socializing. I believe it's really faux socializing. And what I'm finding with many of my college-age students is they are really having decreasing skills in socializing. They're sitting during break with live people around them, but they are addicted to using their phones to make what they think is connection, when really there's people right beside them to make connection. And they've lost the ability to really understand how to introduce themselves to somebody, how to have real conversation. Texting is not a conversation. It's a text. It's messaging, but it's not a conversation. So the verb to converse means to talk, and so I teach English, and so I emphasize that with them. And I think we're really missing something here when we're just saying, you know, visit all these clubs. The difference is, when I was growing up and you joined a club, you actually physically went someplace and you interacted with people and you had real live conversations. You weren't visiting through a screen. And so I think that there's some real danger to what's happening with social media, and I think it's important that we emphasize the downside to what's happening with our young adults.
Rosemary, thanks so much, for your call. And John, I know this is something you've thought a lot about.
Well, I think you're right, Rosemary, and it's a really important point. I'm glad that we're bringing up the downsides. There are studies showing the anxiety that builds up, or risk of depression, from the more social media platforms you use. At the same time, I think adults are to blame. And it's not just because the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world make these platforms. It's also because we've removed the opportunities for public spaces where teens could gather. The number of parents who allow their kids to just roam freely on the streets of the United States is dramatically lower than it was before everyone was worried about stalkers and bad elements across the country. Malls, which were, first something that degraded the public space of the community square and then became their own social space, are now sort of rusting away, and everyone's ordering things from Amazon for Christmas. So as adults, I think it behooves us to think, what are the opportunities we're actually giving kids to socialize? Maybe the reason they're on their phone when they're at home is that we don't give them enough spaces to be alone with their friends in that physical world.
Or we're not talking to them. I mean, I see so many parents at restaurants, for example, where the parents are both on their screens and they're sitting right at a restaurant with their kids. So I also think that we need to teach our kids that just because someone has friended you on Facebook, that doesn't really mean that they're really your friend. You know, so I think we need to be sure that people understand the definition of a friend. I think a friend is somebody you've really done something with in real life.
A Nielsen study that came out a month or two ago reinforced exactly what you said, Nancy. Generation X, that is the 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds, are more addicted to social media than millennials.
Yeah.
And Claire, what advice do you have for people talking to their kids about social media and devices?
Well, I think that it's really important. Even Steve Jobs did not allow his kids to play on the iPhone and these tablets. And it's really important to limit, people call it screen time. But I think as with anything else, maybe generations ago, it was the TV that people were concerned about. And with media, the TV has now become something you can hold in your hand. And it is more dangerous. It's more accessible. And it certainly does hinder growth and intellectual growth and social growth. I think that putting those limits on screen time is very important from a young age. And I think that as kids get older, the parents need to have not just guidance, verbal guidance, but there needs to be, you know, firewalls put up on the devices the kids are allowed to be on. There needs to be, you know, programming put in place. There's several good apps that you can use. You know, KidLogger is one of them, which will track the sites and interactions your child has online. And as your child grows, you can adjust the settings to give a teenager more privacy, let's say, than, you know, a 9 or 10 year old who's doing research on a paper. So these are all important things to think about, and also setting a good example. You're right, Nancy. I've seen so many times a couple or a family out to dinner, and 3 or 4 of them are, you know, sitting there on their tablets. What's the point? You have to know when to put that device away.
I think the goal should always be to use social media as a means to get together face to face, because the magic always happens between people when they're in the presence of each other. And so that's really,
yeah.
Social media should be used to reunite with other human beings in the same place.
I agree. I agree with that. One thing I would like to say, though, one big benefit of, you know, where we are with our social media aspect of our society and the shareability content is you have places like maybe an isolated place in Maine where you have a teenager going through something, and now they have access to other teens that may be going through that same thing that may live, you know, in California or in Wisconsin or in Europe. Mm-hmm. And that is a real benefit to these communities that can be created and curated online.
You know, it seems to me, John, that it's just a matter of how many hours in the day one has. And we're reading that teenagers can have on average social media open 9 hours a day, but that adults, it's approaching 3 hours a day. Who has time, and what is it taking away from?
I'm surprised it's as low as 3 hours a day for adults, given how many people have their Twitter or Facebook open at work. It might be true. I don't know that particular study.
That's for people who are online, so it doesn't count people who just don't go online at all. But maybe they have some way of, I don't know. This is who knows what you can
believe. I think the points that Nancy and Claire made are exactly right. Sometimes it's about getting someone to a party. You know, the point of a device should be to get you to meet another person face to face, ideally, right? As opposed to be just staring at the device when you actually get to the party. That's the thing that bugs me when it's a birthday party and everyone's looking at their phone instead of, you know, looking at the birthday cake that just came out. But Claire's also right that there are people who have, you know, because of their sexual persuasion or their political views or whatever, just there's no one nearby them that has that, you know, that kind of set of interests. And social media can be the connector there. Should it be 9 hours a day? No, God help us. I think what she said about screen time should be something that we all apply to our behavior.
I know people my own age who have decided to go off of Facebook because they felt as though they were getting addicted to that. Is that unusual?
78% of people surveyed have considered leaving all social networks. The downside for them often is that they fear they would lose their memories. You know, you used to have like printed out photos in a box you'd keep on the shelf. And if you lose Facebook, if you delete that, what happens to all those pictures? Well, there are a number of applications that can get those back for you. I mentioned a few of them. There's a really neat project out of Rhizome in New York called Web Recorder that backs up not just your photos but also the network of people and how the comments and so forth they made of them. It's a wonderful tool. And we can post some links to those things on your Facebook page.
I'm writing that down as we talk. Rosemary, thanks so much for your call. I think we have time for a little bit more. This is an email, anonymous email. I post a lot about social and environmental issues, and I seem to not get a lot of likes. I see huge threads. Let me see. I'm having a little trouble with my screen here. I see huge threads of conversation on other posts, and I'm wondering what I need to do to create exposure for issues on Facebook.
Well,
I feel like one expression is to grow bigger ears and a smaller mouth. And that would be to take part in conversations that are happening that other people are having and take part in those conversations. So my advice would be to see what other people are saying and chime in on those conversations.
And I would say it depends on what the goal is. Is the goal to increase the sort of number of people in the conversation, in which case Twitter would probably be a better platform where the hashtags that Claire mentioned do give you a broader reach, something like Black Lives Matter or you know, nasty women. Hashtags can be turned from one side to another and have interesting lives that way. But if the goal is to have, you know, meaningful connections and maybe actually have a conversation with someone who lives in another state but has that same agenda and same problems and same issues as you that needs more than 140 characters, then it's okay to have a small conversation that's targeted as opposed to 1,000 followers overnight.
What's the up-and-coming platform? What are we going to be talking about 2 years from now that we only people like you are aware of today?
Well, Claire, do you have thoughts?
Well, go ahead.
No, go. You're first.
I have thoughts. I think Facebook is here to stay. And now that they've purchased Instagram, that's where it's going to remain. You know, you've seen in 2015, Google basically said, we're shutting down Google Plus. In 2016, they shut down the Google Plus Hangouts. You know, there isn't anything pari passu to Facebook with the marketing ability and also the personal ability and the amount of control you can have. So I really think we're just going to see a lot of improvements on that platform as we have. And Facebook is fantastic about continually improving and listening to consumers. Mark Zuckerberg is an amazing, amazing helm at that company. And in my opinion, only it's really about Facebook and Instagram, and then of course Twitter as the third ancillary outlet.
Yeah, I mean Facebook Live, I think, is a new improvement to Facebook that's very exciting, and it allows you to go and make video live. And it's a lot of fun to do. And I think that's a new improvement. Of course, Snapchat is something that John mentioned previously that a lot of the younger people are using, and you create content that disappears.
I would only say, having been in this for a while, that monopolies are bad and they tend to disappear in the technological landscape. Look at IBM, look at AOL, look at MySpace, look at YouTube, which dominated, had 60% as opposed to 70% penetration of Facebook, so very close, but just was rocked by a scandal whereby advertisers have left in droves following their work being connected to objectionable content.
That's John, it's going to have to be our last word. It's such an interesting conversation. John Ippolito is professor and program coordinator at the Department of New Media at the University of Maine. Claire Kramer, CEO of GeekNation.com. I'm going to say that again, Claire, so I say your name clearly, Claire Kramer. And Geek Nation is a collaboration of several Hollywood actors, writers, producers, and directors, and Nancy Marshall, CEO of Nancy Marshall Communications. I'm Jennifer Rooks. This is Maine Public Radio.